This is The Guardian.
Hello, it's Max here. Before you listen to this pod, you'll notice that my audio quality is low. This is because I plugged the microphone lead into the microphone, but not into the bit that records it. So I sent producer Joel 3 completely empty audio files. I apologize. It happens. We all make mistakes. I apologize to all the listeners and I beg forgiveness.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. Time to take the Europa League seriously special. And as the West Ham fans said, don't jinx it by doing a pod. And we did. Eintracht Frankfurt took 50 seconds to lead at the London Stadium and go into the second leg ahead. Oh, so close for Jared Bowen's injury time overhead kick. If you'd offered Rangers a second leg at home with a 1-0 deficit against RB Leipzig, they'd probably have taken it. Not a classic, brightened up by Nkunku's profligacy and Angelino's lovely volley. In the Europa Conference, Leicester are held by Jose's Roma and Feyenoord score the fastest second half European goal ever. Meanwhile, Ronaldo, I know we've said he's the problem, but is he really, actually, or just less of a problem than all the other things? He helps Manchester United draw with Chelsea while Ragnik considers managing Marko Arnautovic. All that, plus a Premier League preview, your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. Panel today. Nick Ames, welcome.
Hello, Max.
Jonathan Faduba, hello.
Good morning.
And Archie Rintutt, welcome.
Hello.
Let's start at the London Stadium. West Ham 1, Eintracht Frankfurt 2 in the Europa League semi-final first leg. Archie, you were there. I mean, the atmosphere looked great from both sets of fans and sensational start for Frankfurt, and they must be delighted with that result.
Max, you're the second person I've had to answer this question about the atmosphere being great last night.
Was it not?
It wasn't.
Oh, okay.
No. It really wasn't.
Who was the other person who asked you? Who have you been talking to? What is this?
Don Hutchison.
Oh, really? Was that just a, was just a phone call or was it a media
no,
duty?
That was another media appointment.
Right, okay. All right. Was it not very good?
For me, no. This is a European semi-final and look, that early goal certainly took the wind out of West Ham's sails. But I just expected more. That stadium, I've not been there before for football. It's not conducive for an atmosphere. I don't think I'm the first person to say that.
No.
But at the same time, it was louder before kickoff. I thought the decision to absolutely hammer the fans on the PA with this booming music denied the crowd the chance to build their own atmosphere.
Sound very middle-aged there, Archie. What booming music were you forced to listen to?
Oh, it was very much like we're at the darts.
Right, okay, right.
If you went through the darts playlist, yeah, that was it.
Okay. Do you think there is a Spotify darts playlist? God, I don't want to listen to that.
Of course there is.
Anyway, it was interesting because Johnny Liu said, you know, quite a lot of people had left before the end as well. It was quite interesting.
It was so flat. Like, look, my biggest problem with it is that, and it's a trait of English football support, it is this conditional quality to it. This, well, you've got to show us something before we get excited. And I think that given what this West Ham team have done for their fans throughout this run, the West Ham fans owed it to their team to lift them last night after that first goal. They have to sense the moment as well as the team. And I think there was a reason why it took the team so long to get back into the game. But even once they did, I thought that the way that Frankfurt were winning second balls, and it was very encouraging for them. And also, I think that it gave Frankfurt a sniff of, hang on, if we play well, we can shut them up. And it was a real incentive for them to just keep getting stuck into West Ham and knowing that they had ways to keep the crowd quiet. That it didn't feel like a European semi-final, but maybe it was also the nerves of the West Ham fans showing as well.
Jonathan, what did you make of West Ham's performance? I mean, this doesn't take a lot of insight, but the main thing of watching them is just they're quite big, you know. And I don't know why I haven't noticed that before, or maybe Premier League sides are all big. But I was watching West Ham, thinking this is quite. They've got good play. You know, Jarrod Bowen's a lovely footballer. Lanzini's great. I thought Benrahma looked good when he came on. But a lot of their football is just get it to Antonio and hope it sticks.
Yeah, and I think Frankfurt kind of exploited that at times, didn't they? With the way they kind of broke them down on the break as well. I think the highlight for me was the Bowen chance at the end. That overhead kick was pretty special. I suppose West Ham don't really have that culture of being in European semi-finals, and kind of you've kind of sensed that from the game. They don't really take advantage of it and seize the occasion. Even as Archie's just said there, the atmosphere maybe didn't really lend itself to that sort of feeling of a European semi-final, as you said. So it didn't have that kind of feeling like that West Ham were really used to this. It also felt a bit new to them. You know, players like Antonio, Rice, you know, just a bit. It's all just quite new, isn't it, for West Ham? So I felt they struggled to kind of deal with the occasion a little bit at times. And weren't exactly sure whether to sort of stick or twist. But I'm not sure how Archie feels about it. But Frankfurt was obviously excellent against Barcelona, but their league form hasn't been amazing. Was it a case of them just turning up, Frankfurt, or have they been this good in Europe just generally?
Yeah, in Europe and in the big games this season, apart from the opening day against Borussia Dortmund, they should have comfortably beaten Dortmund in January, played a terrible last 20 minutes and lost that 3-2. Both games against Bayern Munich, Kevin Trapp, that guy has been sensational in goal this season. He won the game for them away at the Allianz Arena pretty much single-handedly. And the home game, Frankfurt actually played a lot better, but lost 1-0 in that. But Trapp has been in amazing form. Great save from Jarrod Bowen.
It was,
to tip it onto the post in the first half.
And he really dealt with all the long throws and the crosses, I thought, really, really well. You mentioned that overhead kick, Nick. I mean, I thought I sort of jumped out of my seat. There are, you know, just moments in football matches where you just go, I can't believe that's happened. He was so unlucky.
Oh, just the connection and the sweetness of it and the sheer velocity of it in midair as well. And to have the gumption to do that in the second minute of injury time, wasn't it? Very, very unlucky. And I think West Ham, as we've kind of alluded to, it was a loose performance from them, wasn't it? There wasn't a lot of control. The game was a lot, maybe wilder than they might have liked. But they did have enough chances, you could argue, to have gone in ahead. And Eintracht had one very good chance first half as well, didn't they? They hit the woodwork too. They had a few other counters which might have ended better. But it was that kind of game where you wouldn't have been too surprised at the end if either side had ended up in the ascendancy. And that maybe means that West Ham are entitled to think it could still be a bit of a coin toss for the second leg if they show up.
I still think you're right there, Nick. This is by no means won at all. Having seen what Eintracht Frankfurt did against Real Betis, where they went to Seville, 1-2-1, came back, had a very nervy performance and lost the game itself 1-0 in second half injury time, and then scored a winner through a very fortunate extra time injury time goal. I think that there is an argument to be said that could this Frankfurt team get nervous, or do West Ham have better individuals in their squad to unlock them? I think they do. And it's just a case of getting them right on the night. Saeed Benrahma hits the post from way out, and yet with the chance you'd expect him to tuck in the bottom corner or the top corner, he sends that about 3 miles wide of goal. So yeah, I thought it was just little elements where, particularly on the second balls, breaking up West Ham's momentum last night, Frankfurt did that really well. And Max, you mentioned the physical size of West Ham. I also think it's because Eintracht Frankfurt are particularly slight,
yes,
going forward.
Maybe.
If you look at the skinny figure of Daichi Kamada, who once again
was a brilliant player, vision, right? What a player he is!
He is. I had a Japanese colleague next to me in the press box last night, who is also a Football Weekly listener as well.
Hello.
He had to mention, of course, indeed. And he was saying that when Kamada scored twice away at Arsenal a couple of years ago, they had to wait 2 hours to speak to him after the game. And Kamada came through and they were expecting, you know, because this was the first real time he'd properly shone on the European stage. And they were wondering, would he be quite humble with it? And his tone was apparently much more of, well, yeah, I expect this kind of stuff from myself. So sure, why not? And because of the language barrier, a lot of the time you don't hear a lot from Japanese players. in the media out in Germany, at least. So yeah, he's been excellent for them. He has this weight of finding a pass, which is sensational as well. And yeah, he's going to be a very important player for them to get through next week. And yeah, redemption as well for Martin Hinteregger. So 3 years ago, Max, Martin Hinteregger missed the crucial penalty away at Chelsea. And there's this iconic image, him being held by the away fans at Stamford Bridge. And then 3 years on, last night, when the Eintracht players went in to celebrate with their fans, there was Hinteregger, the first guy in, and the fans were just embracing him, holding his head, but in a very different way. So
Hinteregger is, I was doing TV, Lars was doing Australian TV with us, and Lars was saying that Hinteregger is a qualified helicopter pilot. And when he retires, he wants to become a rescue pilot. And as he was saying that, Mark Bosnich just went, join the club. So I was like, excuse me. And Boss was like, oh yeah, when I was playing in the Premier League, the PFA paid for 70% of your courses, so I learned to be a helicopter pilot. That's an amazing thing for Mark. Who knew that Mark Bosnich? She was like, I can hover at 3 meters, do all of that stuff. Sorry, Nick, I interrupted you.
No, it's fine. And I don't want to turn this into a Daichi Kamada pod, but I just wanted to ask Archie, because the game you mentioned at Arsenal a couple of years ago, he was actually incredible that night. It was the first I'd really seen of him over 90 minutes. And it was one of the games that massively, I think, hammered the nail into Unai Emery, as I remember. But why is he still there 2 years later? Is he not someone who would have pushed on to a Champions League club at 25, for example?
To be honest, I faced this question as well from someone else last night who was looking at Filip Kostic before the game, being like, "Well, hang on, why are these players still here?" And you would say that Kamada is proving that previous season where he'd also performed well was no fluke. Eintracht Frankfurt, there have been a lot of reports around the club that they need to sell this summer because the effect of the pandemic on the Bundesliga, and you don't get nearly the same money from going far in the Europa League as you do from even just coming out of the group stage in the Champions League. Wolfsburg finishing bottom of their group in the Champions League have taken in more TV money than Eintracht Frankfurt have and will do from their Europa League run, regardless of if they make the final. So it's meant that Kostic is likely to leave in the summer. He tried to leave in August, but you might have heard that there was a mix-up with the email addresses and Lazio. I think I remember Lars was going over that way back when. So he's got a year left on his contract, will probably go. Kamada also likely to leave, as is Hinteregger because of his wages. So this is also probably the last time that this group of players will be seen together. And to be honest, they have no right to have reached where they have in European competition. This is a team which is very much more than the sum of its parts, but that is part of the Frankfurt fairy tale. And Daichi Kamada is very much waving the wand, which is putting them en route right now to Seville. But I think that, look, this game, as we say, very, very still a lot to play for still.
We need to mention the ARD radio broadcasters who, in their words, were attacked by West Ham fans behind them when the equaliser went in. Derek Ray, your mate, Archie, tweeting that you could hear it on air. It disrupted the broadcast briefly. They said, I've never experienced anything like it. Philip Hofmeister and Tim Brockmeyer, they were moved to a sort of different part of the press box, sort of in the middle, so not near the fans. They were surprised they were so close to fans. West Ham have said, look, the club is aware of the incident. We'll be working to identify the offender in line with our zero tolerance approach. Anyone identified will have their details passed to the police. They'll be given an indefinite ban, be unable to enter London Stadium and travel with the club. There's no place for this kind of behaviour. I mean, it's so depressing, Archie. But you chatted to the commentators briefly, didn't you?
I had a very brief chat. They seemed a bit shocked, as I think any human being would be after such an event, being punched and having the headset ripped away from them. I've listened back to the radio clip of it, and honestly, the thing that stands out is the professionalism. they keep, after a 15-second silence, I think, to make sure that they're safe, they keep going and just very calmly explain what has just happened to them. And particularly in that environment, like last night, where I was speaking to some Frankfurt fans who are in the away end, and even before that, they were saying, we feel there is a real aggression here. It's a minority, but it's a worrying and significant minority doing this. And yeah, just very sad, because also when West Ham go to Frankfurt next week, if there's a West Ham fan in the home block, they won't have an issue. They won't have an issue.
Sure. Do you know what? I wrote a piece about this, about, you know, the sort of fans chanting obscene stuff and fan behaviour last week. And it's so depressing. And as you're right to say, it's more than just a tiny minority, in inverted commas. And it's just not good enough to say, oh, they're not proper football fans. These literally are, you know, there needs to be an acceptance within football that there are lots of proper football fans who are also complete assholes, right? I don't know how you fix it, but it's just like that. Anyone who's been to a football match knows that. Every club has, it's not just West Ham, it's not just whoever it is, but just this, it's total... There seems to me, it feels like a sort of nervousness to ever say that out loud, as if you're somehow betraying football. If you say, no, I've been every ground I've been to, there've been some, look, you know, every high street you go to, it's the same, but it's just football needs to own it. I don't know how you fix it, but it's really depressing. Let's move on to the Leipzig Rangers game. Nick, you did the minute by minute. What a joy.
Yes, have you ever felt like everyone else is at the party?
Yeah.
Not that I ever feel like that, obviously. But it was Leipzig 1, Rangers 0. As I think you said at the top, it was a fantastic volley from Angelino, the former Man City wing-back who scored the winner. Look, this was not a good game of football, but it was one from which... Rangers on what we must say was a historic night for them, a first European semi since when was it, 2008, and they came very well supported by 4,000 or 5,000 fans who made a lot of noise, and the atmosphere there did sound very good. To be fair, they will not be unhappy with that result, and nor will Leipzig. Leipzig didn't looked like the side that we saw progress so far in the Champions League 2 years ago. They had a lot of possession, a lot of the ball, first half especially. But Rangers sat in. They were very, very deep. First half, we saw virtually nothing of them from an attacking perspective, and didn't see a lot from Leipzig either. They couldn't really move the ball on quickly, recycle it fast, had a couple of shots blocked, that was it. And the home crowd, you could tell, were getting a little bit tense about it all. Second half, we saw Leipzig start to come out and play with a bit of the energy that we maybe associate them with. I say historically, because they're not very old, are they? But over the last half decade or so, created some chances. And Nkunku, I mean, this has probably gone viral or something by now, but he went round Alan McGregor and maybe slightly off balance with an open goal, massively screwed it off target, also missed a free header at the far post. And Rangers were having a sniff or two on the counter. Ryan Kent is a handy player, isn't he? And he got away once or twice down the left, put one across the face of goal. But that was about the sum of it. They were missing, I think we know, Morelos up top is a big miss for them. Kamara Roof wasn't playing. Fashion Sakala was maybe a bit surprisingly left on the bench. But it looked as those minutes ticked down like they were going to take Leipzig back to Ibrox with a draw, which would be massive for them, because I think that Ibrox atmosphere can really help suck the ball in on a big European night. And then, yeah, towards the end, 5 minutes from the end or so, corner comes in, an okay-ish defensive header out and a really fantastic volley from Angelino, and that was it. I mean, I don't give Rangers much of a chance in the second leg if I look at it 11v11, because I think Leipzig are just better, and I think that they'll exploit space better in the second leg because Rangers will have to come at them, and I think they'll score. But Rangers go away thinking we are in this tie, which is, I think, what they would have signed up for at the start of the game. And I think that was very much the sense when you heard the players talk afterwards. So look, it's going to be a fantastic night, I think, at Ibrox next week. They've still got a chance. And I think they will not be unhappy that this was, by and large, a fairly tedious football match.
What I think is interesting, Jonathan, is not necessarily this football match, because, you know, I was watching about five games and this was the one I was sort of watching the least because it seemed the least interesting. But it's this kind of, in my mind, it's hard to know how good, say, Rangers are in a sort of greater context than just the Scottish Premiership, where you know they're perhaps a tiny bit worse than Celtic, or maybe on the same level. You don't know. They've got to play each other this weekend. It's a huge game. So in my mind, it's the same when Bodo Glimt knocked Celtic out, I was like, Celtic are surely better than them, because I just presume that everyone in Scotland is better than everyone in Norway, and I presume everyone in Germany is better than everyone in Scotland. And actually, I guess that's the idea of this competition, right? It's to see teams from different leagues play each other and get some vague idea at what. And it doesn't even mean they're at different levels. Leipzig are better than Rangers, but that doesn't mean. Is that a question? I mean, I think I've talked a lot, but does it make any sense?
Jonathan? I think
you get my point. I got up very early this morning.
Sort of.
Anyway, yeah.
I do get kind of what you mean. I mean, like, in terms of Rangers, obviously, you know, they put in a good show against Dortmund. So, you know, they've already shown themselves against German opposition. And I suppose because we have so many different European competitions now, it's like, what is the pecking order of, like, who's actually better than who in a way, maybe you could say. But, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I probably have a question for Nick, because I'm quite interested in some of the Leipzig players. I mean, I know that Nkunku has been linked with so many big clubs this summer. And I kind of thought that Leipzig would, a bit like you just said there, Max, like I kind of felt that a lot of teams that haven't progressed would progress. And in this case, Leipzig, I kind of felt that they would just brush Rangers aside, to be honest. But, you know, Rangers, I mean, Joey Rebo, I thought, had a really good game. And, you know, they've got some good players in their team, to be fair to the Rangers. So it has kind of surprised me how well they've done in this competition. But at the same time, like you say, maybe some of their players are actually on the level of, you know, the German teams and that kind of thing. I mean, I wanted to get, Nick, your perspective on Josko Gvardiol, because he's like a defender who's been highly like rated and sort of tipped to go on, kind of replaced Ibrahima Konate, who went to Liverpool. I mean, is there a sense that, you mentioned the game wasn't that interesting, is there a sense that like this Leipzig team is actually all right? Or actually, even maybe you might be able to comment, but is this team okay? Because they always regenerate, don't they? They always turn over players so often.
Yeah, they do. There's always someone else coming through. And Gvardiol, in particular last night, it's difficult because he wasn't really up against anyone man for man for a lot of the game, but he did look very good on the ball, I will say that. There was a few moments where he got the ball in tight spots. I'm thinking of a couple in the second half especially, and he was totally unflustered, found his man, took his time, looked very, very composed. And I think he's definitely one to look out for. I think... Archie will know better than me, but this doesn't look like a Leipzig team that operates with quite the same speed as some of its predecessors. Now, I know they were talking quite a bit before the game about being tired and that the schedule might be catching up with them and that kind of thing. And it certainly looked in that first half when Rangers were sitting especially deep. Like, Rangers were very, very deep. And Dominika Tedesco, the Leipzig manager, made a point of commenting afterwards that I think he wasn't used to playing opponents who played that deep. And certainly you could kind of tell from the way they played, because every pass had a bit of hesitance behind it. They weren't building up quickly, anything like that. But when that game opened up a bit, you did see what they're capable of. And yeah, they've got some fantastic players. Like, and Nkunku will not miss two chances like that again in a game. And in fact, he has not been domestically or in Europe. Tyler Adams looked good. I quite liked Henriks actually as well. Played very well. Lima is an excellent surging player. Down the right, who really gets the tempo up when he overlaps. They're going to be a fixture at this level, obviously, for a long time. But I got the sense that they were a little bit off the quality that I would have expected of them, frankly, especially compared to where they were a couple of years ago. But Archie, again, may have more to say on that than me.
I think that's the first time I've seen Nkunku not turn up in a big game this season, whether it's been scoring against Paris Saint-Germain, scoring against Borussia Dortmund, a hat-trick away at Manchester City. You're bearing down one-on-one against Manuel Neuer. No problems. I don't care if I'm in Munich. I'm going to slot this home. And then, yeah, when I saw the replay of the highlights of Nkunku rounding Alan McGregor last night, I was like, what? He's missed this? How's this happened? as you mentioned, Nick, tiredness is very much a factor because let's not forget they've reached the German Cup final against Freiburg. All of Germany or the majority of Germany is willing on Freiburg. And in a similar way, I saw a Frankfurt fan saying, I hope that Rangers smash them 18-0 in the return leg because that's how much they don't want to face RB Leipzig in the final should they get there. So yeah, the tiredness is not all that much of a surprise. And yeah, but RB Leipzig, as much as a significant portion of Germany may not like them, are looking at what could be their most successful season so far.
That'll do for part one. Part two, we'll do the Europa Conference League and Manchester United 1, Chelsea 1. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly, our live shows. Go to myticket.co.uk. Dave says, hi, Max and co. Now that you, Max, are based down here in Australia and with all these Premier League teams descending on the country over the coming months, any chance of us seeing a few dates for Football Weekly live tour down in Australia? If it can only be one, I'm happy to choose the proper football hotbed of Melbourne. So look, the dream is New York, LA, Sydney, Melbourne in 2023. If you could email footballweekly at theguardian.com and say that's a good idea, maybe other people will think it's a good idea because at the moment, only I think that's a good idea. Let's see the Conference League. Leicester won, Roma won. Jonathan, do you have interesting things and exciting things to say about this football match?
Not massively. I think it ended obviously a draw. Cagey, Roma, kind of off the back of their controversies against Buda Glimt, who would have thought that a Jose Mourinho team would end up in controversy in the last match where the manager of Glimt threatened to quit football because he was sort of so disgusted by the antics of Roma in that tie. This was a much more balanced game, really. A little less heated as well. There was a big sort of bromance between Brendan Rodgers and Jose Mourinho from the sidelines, obviously coached together at Chelsea and kind of maybe not a mentor figure, but certainly, you know, I think Brendan sort of looks up to Mourinho. So there was a lot of comments of, you know, I've got you a nice bottle of wine and, you know, we're going to drink this lovely Portuguese wine together in the aftermath.
Am I the only one that finds manager wine chat really fucking excruciating? It's just like this total look how much we respect each other. I bought him, we had a glass of wine in a room, it shows that we just really understand each other. I bought him this, he said he got me the best Portuguese bottle of wine, he's crying because it's really expensive, but he wanted to give me my favorite bottle of Portuguese wine, it was really hard to find, I don't know how he found it, but I know he paid. It's just like, look, people buy each other bottles of wine. People occasionally have glasses of wine together. You know, it's just like, it's sort of, football managers seem to believe this takes them to some elite level that other humans aren't at. And I just don't, so every time it's like, oh yeah. You know, when in the NFA Cup third round, you know, Stevenage play away at Arsenal and then Mikel Arteta invites the Stevenage manager in for a glass of wine. It's like the best thing you could possibly do in the history of the world. Oh, anyway, I mean, I'll stop now, but...
I mean, they kind of indulge. They kind of. No, you're right, because they're kind of in the press conference as well. They really indulged this wine conversation. I think one of the people in the press conference was saying, like, when are you going to drink this wine, Jose? Like, will you drink it after the game? Will you drink it after the final? Will you wait till you've won the final? It was like almost bigger than the match. In fact, you know, this bottle of wine and when Jose Mourinho is going to drink it. So
it's funny seeing how much this affects you, Max.
The irony is we're spending more time talking about being annoyed about it than talking about the football match. I mean, I think like all of us, it was on like, I had four screens. It was on my laptop. I did kind of see it. You know, I thought the run for the run from the fullback, Zalewski, was brilliant for the goal and a lovely pass for Pellegrini.
I thought Fofana was, he got caught in two minds. He thought, yeah. Should I track him? Or should I be going towards him? And I thought that Roma used that space incredibly well. And yeah, that was really impressive, I thought. And yeah, I think, look, it's just a very exciting, I think, tie for Leicester to be going to Roma. And you're still in this for the second leg of a European semi-final. Fantastic. Given that Brendan Rodgers, I think, went from, I've never heard of this competition when they transitioned from the Europa League to the Conference League to now they're in this. You mentioned the wine chat I don't know if you saw the full time whistle where like Jose is whispering sweet nothings in his ear for about a good 10 seconds. And you're like, what are the mind games going on here? Can you imagine what is being said between these two here? I'd love to have had some sort of script or someone to mock up a script of what might possibly have been said there. Because yeah, it looked very whiny and intense, but whiny in the sense that might get under your skin, Max.
The interesting thing about all these ties, Rugby League and Conference League, is that all the ties are still alive, which is great. Feyenoord beat Marseille 3-2. Feyenoord scored 10 seconds into the second half. They were two up, went back to 2-2. They scored 10 seconds into the second half, the fastest second half goal in the history of European football. It was a Marseille kickoff, and they just went backwards and backwards and backwards and then underhit the back pass to the striker running through. And I think, is it Sampaoli who's the manager of Marseille? He's quite an angry man. He's quite angry when he was managing Argentina. And just the thought that he would be pretty angry to see that. You know, nothing five. First five, nothing silly. And then that happened. Let's go to Old Trafford, shall we? Manchester United won, Chelsea won in the Premier League. Matt says, is Man United won, Chelsea won the most unsurprising result of all time? Chelsea had 21 attempts on target to Manchester United's 6. I guess it's telling, Jonathan, that this game we're covering after all those European games. I know that the semi-finals and we're billing it as a Europa League special, but it says something about a Man United-Chelsea game when it's kind of fifth on the running order.
Yeah, it was kind of like having a heavyweight boxing match whilst the Super Bowl's going on. Kind of just the attention just got, you know, you didn't really know how to feel about the game. It's like, is this a big game? Not really, but they're quite big teams, but they're not really anymore. So you didn't, it was
maybe
quite,
it's like a heavyweight boxing fight of two retired boxers.
Yeah,
it's like, it was a bit harsh on Chelsea, isn't it? It's like suddenly Evander Holyfield decided to take on
Marvin Hagler.
I can't think of Marvin Hagler sounds good. Let's hope they're both still alive. The real question about the Ronaldo is the interesting part of this. I mean, Joe says he's just got 17 league goals for United this season. 16 of those have contributed to points. He's only scored in one defeat. Is he simultaneously then both a problem and United's best player? Like, I have subscribed to the Jonathan Wilson hypothesis that Ronaldo is a problem. And yet, he took his goal brilliantly. He played pretty well again, Jonathan.
He was okay. Chelsea dominated the match. Like, that's the bottom line. So it was not like he wasn't in the game a lot. The one thing you can guarantee with Ronaldo is at this stage of his career, he's a poacher. You know, the chance came to him. It was a brilliant ball from Matic over the top, who had a really good game, actually. Maybe he saw the Chelsea shirts and decided to put in a good performance because he's not been amazing this season. But he was quality in that match. Yeah, it was a really lovely ball over the top. And Ronaldo, just great control and finish. He's got that poacher's instinct. I'm not sure how I feel about the Ronaldo debate in the sense of like he is United's best player. I mean, a 17 Premier League goals now, I think more than 20 for the season. He is the one player that you can sort of rely on to deliver in the team. He's the only player who really offers much going forward. So you do lose a bit in terms of pressing, but you know, United, even last season, they weren't exactly an amazing pressing unit really when they didn't have Ronaldo. So I still think it's a net plus Ronaldo in the team, but really, Chelsea were dominant. I mean, in the first like 20, 30 minutes, I think they had 70% possession at Old Trafford, which is crazy. It drove Gary Neville to sort of the verge of tears. He was calling United a disgrace, even at 0-0, which was a bit harsh, I thought. But Chelsea obviously got the goal early in the second half. Alonso, it was a really nice finish. Reece James was quality the whole match. He felt like he almost deserved the assist for it. Havertz got a flick on to the back post and Alonso, it was a really nice volley. And then, yeah, obviously, like you said, Ronaldo equalised almost straight away. So there wasn't really that period of time for United fans to get down. Before the match, the big, obviously, story was the big protests against the Glazers. There was like empty seats in the stadium until, I think, the 17th minute. It's something related to do with the amount of years they've been in charge, obviously, since 2005. And then after the 17th minute, more fans started to come into the stadium. But yeah, it's just kind of a moody atmosphere, not a huge amount to play for. Obviously, there was a lot of rumours pre-match as well that Ralf Rangnick might be taking the Austria job. So I don't know, maybe he was watching Konrad Leiner as well before the match, seeing how he's getting on at Leipzig. But
I don't think he needs to watch him. He knows him.
Yeah,
well.
Exactly. Well, maybe for Manchester United, or maybe who knows that. But yeah, it just had a sort of a feeling of like it's a bit harsh on Chelsea saying faded teams, but they didn't really have much to play for. Obviously, they got the one eye on the FA Cup final, and they really should have probably won this game sort of fairly comfortably, but just fluff their lines in the final third.
Interesting you mentioned, you know, Gary Neville saying, you know, it's a disgrace. The international coverage, when they sort of packaged up the first half, the graphic was, it just said, dreadful United. And I sort of wonder, you know, are we just, is that what they were, Nick, in the first half? Or are we just now so programmed to expect them to be rubbish that when they just, you know, play out a pretty, you know, Chelsea were better, but were they dreadful in that first half?
Yeah, it's kind of become a bit of a thing, hasn't it? That, you know, we have to lay into United in the strongest terms possible when they don't turn up at high intensity, which to be fair, they don't normally. From what I saw of the game, because I didn't watch it in its entirety, they were not good, and they were definitely second to most things, short of the speed required. And as Jonathan said, they could and should have been behind. I think Havertz had a good chance, didn't he? And he was far from alone in that. They could easily have been well out of the game. And then, yeah, Ronaldo bailing them out with that touch and finish. And yeah, the narrative does seem to have shifted in the last sort of almost last 12 to 15 hours that United are no longer carrying Ronaldo, but they're being carried by him. And really, I'm not sure that either of those things is true, but it seems to be that one of them has to be true in the online debate. Really, they're just a fairly sluggish, slapdash team and outfit and organisation that needs a systemic change from top to bottom. And he is an important player in a system that's not working very well. And that's about it. But yeah, in answer to your question, it was not their worst 45 minutes that I've ever seen, even in my last week or two, but they were definitely off it.
For me, Ronaldo has to go in the summer. This is important to Manchester United's rebuild. Has he saved them on many occasions this season? Of course. But he is symbolic of the problems at that club, that you have a very expensive individual who is he there? Is he in it for Manchester United right now? I don't think he is, because if he is, he might actually consider working against the ball, which he's obviously not bothered about. And I think it has to be about the team and about trying to create a new identity instead of always harking back towards the past. And whilst I think that there was a decent dose of nostalgia with him coming back for Manchester United fans, I think it's the party has long been over in terms of that. And you can see that in terms of the frustration of the fans right now. And they have to realise and grasp the bigger picture, which is Cristiano Ronaldo, sure, he's scoring the goals, but is he having a positive effect on the rest of the team? Is he really gathering all the players around him? Now, I don't think you have to watch Manchester United too closely to realise what the answer is to that question. And that is important.
He's not the only one, right? He's not the only one who's not. None of them are gathering around anyone. They're not. You know, no one's doing the gathering.
But that's
There's
the point.
No gathering.
But Cristiano Ronaldo is the most high-profile player at that club. That needs to be sorted, this whole buying expensive shiny toys which don't fit into any real coherent system, instead of actually building from the ground up. Will Erik ten Hag change that? Don't know. Is he going to have enough people at the club who are going to push in the same direction as him? That's the question.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the Ronaldo thing. I wonder if it's sometimes maybe I'm not saying Archie are doing this, but in general, I wonder sometimes if it's like the people judging the personality rather than the player on the pitch. I think in terms of pressing and that kind of thing, I mean, you don't necessarily need to be a pressing team. I think Spurs last season were one of the bottom five teams in the league for pressing, and did okay. I think this season as well, they're third bottom of the league this season, Spurs, for pressing intensity. But they're still doing quite well. So, you know, we don't have this debate about Harry Kane pressing, for example. It seems to be Ronaldo is the one that gets accused of that. And at 37, let's face it, you're not going to be a pressing player. If you look at last night's game, I mean, there were instances where Ronaldo's running back to close down and Rashford is kind of jogging around. Some people are arguing that maybe it was a tactical instruction for Rashford to sort of stay higher up the field. But I've certainly seen Rashford put in more, you know, kind of tepid performances in terms of pressing, and that as many as Ronaldo this season. You only had to look at the Liverpool game. Ronaldo, Rashford's sort of running off the ball was not worth speaking about, to be honest. So, I mean, United, their pressing intensity has dropped this season. They were eighth in the league last season, and this season they're now 13th. So obviously it has dropped off, but is that totally Ronaldo's fault, or is it kind of the whole team generally doesn't really know what they're doing from a tactical point of view? I mean, I think with the Rangnick thing, it's just a bit like I actually said there, that United are kind of just mumbled in what they're doing. They don't, you know, they've brought in someone who really should be a general manager or a sporting director type role to be a manager for 6 months. And now he's going to be a manager of a national team and kind of be a part-time consultant. Whereas really his remit should have been looking overview of the club, which is apparently what he's going to deliver. But really, you could argue they just needed a manager. It was still November. There's still loads of things to play for. They were still in all competitions except the League Cup. So, yeah, I think it's a bit like what Nick said. It's a general kind of malaise. There's no real kind of clue what's going on. I don't think the players haven't bought into Ranić's ideas. It's pretty clear. There's loads of injuries. People maybe not that bothered about playing. I mean, Cavani, no one's seen him for months, and he seems to be fit for Uruguay. So it's just a general malaise about United. I think the sooner this season ends, the better for them. With Chelsea, I thought that Havertz and Werner just, you know, they got their own issues as well in the final third. Lukaku came on and he was booed and kind of it didn't really impact the game either. So both teams are just kind of having a bit of a weird season, really, on and off the pitch.
Stephen says, please mention this. And it was the Glazers out. Some fans went with, you know, one letter each to spell Glazers out. And for a time, they wrote Glarezers out. They did actually get the letters in the right. They did get them right eventually. But, you know, that's when the photo was taken. Some more good news for Manchester United is Jurgen Klopp has signed a two-year extension to commit him to Liverpool to 2026. They must look with envy over there. And that'll do for part two. Part three, we'll have a look at the Premier League games happening this weekend. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Let's look at the Premier League games then. So look, the title race sees Liverpool go to St James's Park, play Newcastle 12:30, Man City go to Leeds at 5:30. Nick, can you see either of them dropping points? Both games quite interesting, aren't they? Leeds still got something to play for. Newcastle in great form.
Yeah, I will be attending the Leeds v Man City game and indeed covering it. And I'm really looking forward to it. I'm quite excited. I think obviously there's a big disparity between where the two teams are at. But I think the atmosphere is going to be incredible in there. Leeds are going to be very up for this. The crowd are going to be very up for it. There's the sort of geographical element as well, and Leeds need points. They got a good one at Crystal Palace, obviously, the other night when they weren't sparkling and they had a couple of let-offs near the end, but they dug in and played fairly well from what I saw. And they're going to make it tough for City. You still have to back City to come out on top of that and win, because they almost always do. And I see no reason why they wouldn't if they played at their best. But I think there'll be an edge there on Saturday night. I really do. And when there is an edge like that, somewhere like Elland Road, strange things can happen. So that's not a very sort of structured tactical breakdown of how the game might pan out. But I do think it's going to be a quite interesting occasion that City will probably come out on top of. But I think there's enough of a sort of snap and snarl to the occasion, potentially, that they could be given an awkward moment or two. And I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, and I guess also, you know, City's European games have just been tougher than Liverpool, haven't they? You know, like Atleti twice, and then the Real Madrid game is obviously tough. They've got a tougher job next week when they think about rotation compared to Liverpool, who sort of are strolling a little bit. I guess I haven't heard Jurgen Klopp complaining at the early kickoff, but I presume that is due at some point to complain that they're the early kickoff. Jonathan, can you see Newcastle troubling Liverpool? Can you see anyone troubling Liverpool ever again?
No, I think Liverpool win fairly comfortably, to be honest. You're right in what you say. I mean, Klopp tried to get the game rearranged, didn't he? So he's already... They've already complained in that sense. They tried to get them
moved. Oh, right. Okay. I didn't know that. Okay. Fair enough.
They tried to get the game moved. I think they put in an official complaint.
That is complaining. That is definitely complaining.
It's about as big as a complaint as you can have. You're right. They've had an easier draws, so they've been able to kind of rest players. Obviously, Trent got taken off towards the end of the game against Villarreal. They're able to rest Mane for a little bit, and you know they've got a good squad now as well, really good squad. So Diaz also came off, so I imagine there'll probably be some rotation there. You might see maybe Joe Gomez play or someone like that, maybe Tsimikas. The early kickoff, is that a big problem? I don't really think so. It's enough time to recover. I can't really see anything other than Liverpool win, I'll be honest.
We should probably also mention, Max, that Jurgen Klopp signed a new contract yesterday as well.
Yeah, I did that at the end of part two.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, were you not focused? You had a late night?
Yeah, mate. I've got 4 hours sleep. I just wanted to say...
if you haven't heard it, God, the listeners, I can't expect the listeners to listen to anything if the people actually on the thing.
Mate, 4 hours sleep.
But you're right. We should mention it.
Okay, I'm gonna try and resell my lack of concentration there. It's more focus on the fact that it will take him up to over a decade at Anfield. And just on that, like from a German perspective, how he's been able to refresh himself and consistently evolve, I think has been the most impressive thing about his reign there. And he seemed to not have that variability when he was at Dortmund. It was always, it seemed to be more of the same thing. And what he's done at Liverpool, like similar things in terms of making superheroes out of midfielders who everyone here had perhaps written off, namely Jordan Henderson, for example, I think comes to the fore in my mind most of all. Yeah, that's a lot of people in the Premier League, that's going to produce a sigh and a groan. But for Liverpool fans, how exciting is that they get further chance to build something with him? And there's one thing as well, Max, that caught my eye about the run-in for City and Liverpool, which is on the final day, if it still goes down to that, City have got Aston Villa. So I'm just imagining the prospect of Steven Gerrard potentially having his hand in a Liverpool title win should his Aston Villa team do something on that final day for
him. Yeah, I know.
Or not. There we go.
While we're on Liverpool as well, actually, it is worth mentioning that Jurgen Klopp's agreed a 2-year contract committing him to the club in 2026. Talking about managers and former teams, Everton played Chelsea. Massive game for them. You wonder if Super Frank will get a favour from his former club. Burnley go to Watford as well, so that they absolutely massive games at the bottom of the table. And you know, if Chelsea play like they did yesterday, you'd expect it's going to be very difficult for Everton. And then in the race for top four, Spurs play Leicester, hoping that Leicester are going to be focusing on the Europa Conference League. Arsenal go to West Ham, hoping that West Ham are going to focus on the Europa League. You can't trust either of them, can you? On Everton, Michael says, with the news that Everton fans are boycotting Domino's over a funny tweet, what's the most petty reason you've boycotted something yet? Domino's tweeted...
Sorry, what?
Domino's Pizza's tweeted a meme of Ralph Wiggum rolling down a hill with reference to Richarlison falling over, and some Everton fans are furious about it. I have a story that Paul Hawksby told me on TalkSport, which is slightly similar, but it's not quite the same. It's sort of not using something, right, that because they're sponsoring your rivals. And there are lots of stories about this. Lots of fans have done this, going, I'm not going to buy it. You know, a Tottenham fan not buying a JVC telly, or an Arsenal fan not drinking Holston or whatever. But Paul told me this story where an Aston Villa fan was with his family, and they were driving down the motorway, and their windscreen smashed, and they're on the side of the road for like an hour and a half. You can see what's coming. And then a man from Auto Windscreens came to fix the windscreen. He went, nope, sorry. We're going to wait another 2 hours and get someone else to fix the windscreen, because I'm not giving money to Auto Windscreens while they sponsor Birmingham City. Anyway, look, there's lots happening in the EFL. I don't need to tell you exactly what to look out for. If you support those teams, you will know. We'll cover it on Monday's pod. Jim says, has Archie sent Thomas Muller his dry cleaning bill yet? Yeah, he sort of went viral, didn't you? Got covered in beer when Bayern won the league, Archie.
I did. Thomas Muller picked on... Our studio expert at the weekend, Bastian Schweinsteiger, and Arne Friedrich, who was next to him as well. And Bastian Schweinsteiger had said repeatedly to Thomas Müller earlier in the day, he'd had two telephone conversations with him, that you're not going to come and soak me with beer, right? And Müller had said, no, of course not. And as soon as I saw these great vessels of beer coming out, I thought, I've got a problem here. I mean, I brought a spare set of clothes as it was, because I knew what might go down. And yeah, Mr. Schweinsteiger accuses me of being the one who actually helped this occur, because I stepped on his cable because he was tied in. So it meant he was essentially tethered to the desk. He had nowhere to run. That was part of his issue. But yeah, he got soaked good. But I think my actual beef needs to be with Benjamin Pavard, who followed up for no reason and splashed me. And yeah, it's a 10 euro dry cleaning bill that I'm looking at here. And I've had no word yet from either Müller or Pavard, but yeah, have to see how that goes.
We could do a crowdfunder for you, Archie.
Yeah, thanks. It's a good idea. Yeah.
I appreciate
that. Really, we should just, I want to pressure Benjamin Pavard into like handing you a 10 euro note. And we'll leave with this email from Matt Alley in Bristol. Says, hi, Max and team. Your football manager memories on Monday's episode took me right back to my own time being addicted to that wonderful game. 2008 was the year I got most addicted and gave me one of my proudest moments when about 12 seasons in, a new player appeared in my youth team with my surname. The game had given me a son. And even more excitingly, the coaches said he had potential to be the best player in the world. Of course, with no regard to nepotism, he was straight into the first team. And a few seasons later, he was banging in goals for England. I'm now expecting my first real child in October, and they are going to have a lot to live up to. I've never heard of any other player having a son. So do we think this is some kind of football manager prophecy? Ali in Bristol. Thank you, Ali. It's a lovely email. And that'll do for today's special Friday pod. We'll do another one next Friday after the Europa League second legs. Hopefully we won't jinx West Ham too much in the meantime. Archie, thank you so much.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Max.
Football Weekly was produced by Joel Grove with Silas Gray. Our executive producer is Danielle Stevens. We'll be back on Monday.
This is The Guardian.